Hello, everybody, and welcome to Upstate on the Move, a podcast highlighting entrepreneurs who are on the move here in upstate New York. We are coming to you from Ignite U New York in downtown Troy. My name is Jack Carpenter, and I'm joined by my co-host, Bob Manasseer, the entrepreneur in residence here at Ignite U.
Hello, everyone.
Today, we are sitting down with the jack of all trades, Vic Christopher. Vic started out as a janitor, turned filmmaker, turned minor league baseball executive, turned economic development coordinator here in Troy, New York, and is now the vice president of Clark House Hospitality.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm done, though. I mean, I'm happy with where I'm at.
Yeah.
It's been a long road, but I'm really happy, like, lately, because things are good. So I'm chill.
With business? You know
what I mean?
Yeah. Were you ever not chill?
Yeah. No, I've always felt like I was trying to find my groove.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And even with this business, it's like, the company itself is like, a little over 6 years old, but we expanded so quickly, you know, and we started with like nothing.
How did you start?
With nothing. I mean, we built it out of junk.
Mm-hmm. The building you guys are based in right here on Broadway in downtown Troy. Was this the first time you ever acquired a building
to start a business? Yeah.
Yeah.
We started with the Lucas Confectionery.
Mm-hmm.
It was a little wine bar. You know, it wasn't an ambitious project. It certainly wasn't anything that I thought was going to be the birth of a company. I never thought, hey, this is going to turn into like a company.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but we have over 50 employees now, and they do pretty well.
Yeah,
and things are good. So, but it was a happy accident, really.
So let's go back to the happy accident, because we detect an accent, and it might be the south of France. I'm not good with accents. So you chose Troy. What was that? How did you get here?
Troy chose me, really. I was a janitor, like you mentioned earlier, out of high school. I had a job as an 18-year-old working for the New York City Board of Education in Coney Island. And I wasn't, it's a good job when you're 18.
Mm-hmm.
And 6.5 years goes by, you know, and I'm in my mid-20s. And I'm just like, what the hell am I doing with my life?
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't happy.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't happy. I was making good money, but I hated the job.
You were comfortable.
It was excruciating. No.
No.
I hated what I was doing. I was depressed. I didn't like it. You know, I was cleaning the same 4 staircases and 30 classrooms every day for years.
Then why'd you stay there for 6 years? That's a long time.
It was good money. You know, it was good money. And this is like in the late 90s, digital video started to become available to the consumer. And I bought a Sony DV cam and started making these crazy movies. And, it would take me probably about an hour and a half to clean the school.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was there for 7.5 hours, 4 to midnight.
Yeah.
And so I was working on my video editing in the school. Like if I cleaned really quick, I could work on my movies. And so, I was a filmmaker. Like when I went out at night to try to get girls, hey, what do you do? I'm an independent filmmaker, you know?
And here's my camera.
Yeah.
But this was in the beginning when digital video was brand new. Digital video editing was like brand new. This is like one of the early versions of Adobe Premiere came out. I got it.
Yeah.
And I just kind of was a self-taught videographer. You know, I read books on the subject and learned things like how to frame a shot. And Jack and I have co-produced, you know, countless videos at this point. And we talk production talk, you know, because that's the background that I come from. So
it was passion.
Yeah, well, it was like, you know, a lot of people have some hobby that they do, I guess, to a degree. But in my particular situation, it became my primary focus at some point.
Yeah.
You know, because you don't have to focus on being a janitor. That's just like, that's nothing to be proud of, really.
It's mindless work.
Mindless work.
Yeah.
It's mindless work, but when you can do mindless work, then you can really make things happen. Mm-hmm. When you could shut your brain off and do mindless work, then you can do anything. See, I get into like a Zen state when I'm doing tedious work.
I know. What are we doing here? I feel like I should be meditating.
The reason
I need a rake and some sand.
But the reason why I was able to build things is because I can do mindless work.
Yeah.
And a lot of people have a tough time doing that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I loaded sheetrock today, like 30 sheets of sheetrock into a truck and, you know, drove it and unloaded it again. And I'm just like, I get into a zone. It's a mental state that I can get into. And it's just because I was a janitor for so long that I get into the zone. mm-hmm. and then I can do physical work, very tedious work, very boring work. You know, I don't have a problem cleaning things. You know, I was working in the basement last night. We had a sewage issue, you know, and I'm running the snake through back and forth, back and forth. It's a state of mind, you know what I mean? But it took me many years to be able to put myself into a situation where I could do mindless work. And that enables me to do anything, really.
Do you think that's an essential skill to have as a business owner, a physical business owner?
I don't know.
Because we've talked a lot, and you're telling me you're dealing with plumbing issues, but yeah. you're running this very nice restaurant, and a lot of people probably think it's glorious work, but then you're like, no, I was down in the basement for 2 hours with a snake.
Well, most people probably hire somebody to do that type of stuff. You know, I just don't feel the need to, because I met with Heather, my partner, and I was telling her about last night, and I said, you know, it's a really rough night, and I can't get the smell of sewage out of my skin, and I was scrubbing my hands, and she's like, you know, that's terrible. Why don't you just get a professional in there? I'm like, because I love it. You know what I mean?
Hands-on.
I don't know why I like doing this type of work that I do, but I learned how to do that back when I was a janitor. Although I wasn't happy doing that, you know, I got really excited about making movies and making films. And one night I'm out, I ran into a kid that I went to high school with. We were friendly. We weren't friends. And he's like, hey, what are you doing these days? I'm like, yeah, I'm a filmmaker, man. I'm a documentary filmmaker. He's like, you know, I have an idea for a movie. I want to produce it. I've been writing scripts. I was like, yeah, we got to get together. And then me and him formed a company, not even an official company. We started making movies together.
Mm-hmm.
Movies that were good enough to be in film festivals.
Yeah.
And so we worked together on a couple of no-budget feature films. So two 90-minute movies we did with no budget, like zero, you know. And that helped me work with no budget in business, too. You know, these skills all come back. Once you develop these skills, they manifest themselves in you, you know, later in life.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't realize it at the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I'm this janitor / filmmaker. And then Giuliani appropriates money for minor league ballparks for the Staten Island Yankees and the Brooklyn Cyclones, which were the New York Mets minor league team in Coney Island. And I remember reading those early articles. I'm a diehard Met fan my whole life since I'm a kid. And they were going to hire local people. And so I was a janitor, like, right up the block from where the ballpark was being built. And I had a friend that got in with the team. He got me an interview. I walked through the door. I had a position available for video producer. And I put my DVDs on the desk, and I say, I'm your guy. Like, I'm going to be the video producer of the Brooklyn Cyclones.
Mm-hmm.
And
it worked out.
No, and they were like, you're overqualified.
Oh.
You know, and here I am. Like, I'm a janitor. Like, I'm not even a legit filmmaker, but I did make feature films.
And because of the quality of your films, they thought you were overqualified.
No, because
they didn't even look at them.
No, listen, they were looking for more of like an intern type of position. And the position was like a game day job. It wasn't like a full-time job. You know, mm-hmm. They only had a handful of full-time jobs at the ballpark. And I just had this vision of turning the entertainment of the minor league stadium and the big video board in left field into like in between innings film festivals. You know what I mean? Where I could get like the mascot in different Brooklyn type of scenarios. And so I had this vision very early on, and I was trying to sell it to them, and I was doing the math, and I'm like, okay, as a janitor, I could make like 50 grand a year with overtime. This is back in the year 2000, a mm-hmm. long time ago, whatever. You know, it was a while, it was 20 years ago, basically. So that's good money for a kid, you know? And so they turn around and say to me, look, we have a game day position and it's a $75 game rate. Like, that's it. You have 38 home games.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm doing the math, and I'm like, wow, if they could pay me $200 a game, I could get rid of the janitor gig and still live the same way. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I have an interview and a meet with one guy. Yeah, okay, we'll get back to you. And then now it's getting close to opening day, and it's like 6 weeks before opening day, and they never call me back. And I'm like, I guess I blew the gig.
Yeah.
And then I get a call from this guy, like a Napoleon, short guy, very intimidating guy. His name is R.C. Reutemann.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the guy that created the stadium in Binghamton, the Binghamton Mets, in 94.
Yep.
He built that ballpark like for like $4 million. You know, he got a real nice little ballpark built for a little bit of money. Mm-hmm. And so the Mets remembered him, you know, or they dealt with him. But back then, the Mets were owned by Nelson Doubleday and Jeff Wilpon. The company was Wilpon Doubleday. But the Brooklyn Cyclones were a Wilpon project. And then right before they, you know, kind of started to build the stadium, Doubleday says to Wilpon, I don't want any Mets employees working at all on this project. So they had to get guys from the outside. Otherwise, they would have just stacked that, you know, office with Mets guys.
Mm-hmm.
Mets staff could not work on the Brooklyn Cyclones, like, you know, at all. And so they brought RC in from the outside. And then he needed to put a team together. So anyway, I knew of this guy. He was a very intimidating guy.
Yeah.
He says, sit down. I walk in his office, just like right away, just sit down. You know, like he had no time for me. He said, you interviewed with the general manager of this team, and he told you that the job paid $75 a game. And you turn around and you want $200 a game? And now at this point, I'm thinking, like, I'll do this for like $7 a game. Because this guy was like, you know what I mean? Like, he was an intimidating guy. Like, yeah. I would have done anything. I would have, you know, done anything this guy wanted me to do at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't even talk. I was nervous. And, you know, without hesitation, he says, well, I'm going to give you that $200 a game. And you're going to be the best this business has ever seen. And then I just got up and I shook his hand, and that was it. I was loyal to him. And then eventually he got promoted to work in the major leagues a couple seasons later. And I'm the only guy he took with him. And then his contract ran out with the Mets. And then he came up here to take over the Tri-City Valley Cats. And he calls me up in July of 2004. And he says, I was getting ready for a game. And he says, I'm going up to Troy, New York. And you're coming with me. You're going to be my assistant general manager. I said, boss, I love you. I ain't leaving Brooklyn.
Have you lived there your whole life?
Of course.
Yeah.
You don't leave Brooklyn.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like four generations of Brooklyn. I said, and I bought an apartment. I was doing okay. The Mets started to pay me well. I was doing good.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I love you so much, boss, but, you know, I can't leave. He says, you know, I brought you into this thing. He guilted me. He's like, basically, I picked you up off the scrap heap. You're a nobody janitor.
Yeah.
You know, look what I turned you into. And now I need you up here.
Yeah.
I said, boss, I love you. I'm not coming. He says, well, you have to at least come up for an interview because I told ownership that you were, you know, you were a guy that we had to get.
Mm-hmm.
I said, look, I'll take a ride up there. We can hang out, but that's it. Don't expect me to work for this team or agree to anything.
Yeah.
So we picked a date, you know, a couple weeks from then. It was mid-July. It wasn't an interview. I think I worked with the guy for years. He knows what I'm all about.
Mm-hmm.
I get in my car, which was his car that he sold me. This BMW was a 1986.
You were really integrated with this guy, weren't you?
No, he was like a second father to me.
Yeah,
he owned Vic.
No, listen, the guy taught me everything about the baseball business,
mm-hmm.
and I was like a sponge, you know. And I love the Mets so much,
yeah,
and their history. And now to be able to talk to a guy, you know, like infinitely about the inner workings of minor league baseball, I extracted all the knowledge I could from him, you know. And I used to stay at the ballpark in Brooklyn and be the last guy. He was the last guy to leave. And so I was always the second guy, last guy to leave, mm-hmm. because I wanted the opportunity to hang out with him. And so, you know, many times he'd say, hey, what are you doing? You want to go out for a drink after work? I said, yeah. And we would just have dinner and drink and talk about the Mets sometimes for 5-6 hours after work. And that was at the point I fell in love with minor league baseball. You know, I was a lifer in my mind at that point.
Mm-hmm.
I just really fell in love with the industry. So anyways, back to mid-July 2004, I get in the Beamer. It was a 735 IL. It was a 1986 with like 290,000 miles on it. The car, you know, it would you turn it on and the dashboard would read in German because it had all electrical problems. Sometimes it was English. It was like bremlished, you know, when you get in the car. And the car ran terrible. No air conditioner in the summer. It was awful, but
it got you there.
Yeah, it looked cool from the outside. You know, like I could get girls with that car.
Just not in
it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Actually, no, and they would sit, and if they would sit in the passenger seat, they'd be facing me because the lumbar support was twisted.
Oh, my God.
You know what I mean? Like, the car was a wreck. I had a golf club holding the seat up, you know, propped into the back seat. I'll never forget Howard Johnson, who was an 86 Met and ended up
third baseman.
Yeah, great guy, Hojo. Love him. We still talk on Twitter quite a bit. He gets in the car. He's like, He's like, Vic, what? Like, what is up with this car, bro? Got a golf club holding the seat up. Like, hey, and it's got personality.
It's like, yeah.
I drive up to Troy, and I park in front of Bradley's Tavern. It was 11 a.m. I was an hour early for my interview, so I was like, yeah, the hell with it. Let me stop in and have a drink in this dive bar over here. And I stopped in. I'll never forget. I had a screwdriver. First drink I ever had in the city of Troy was in Bradley's Tavern. And, you know, we had a quote-unquote interview. You know, we hung out.
And you had it at Bradley's?
We bounced around Troy a little bit. Yeah. And then I just went home. And that was it.
What was your first impression of Troy?
It was rough.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, no. You know? I mean, I just caught it on 4th Street. It was kind of like a dreary day. So I turned the job down. And the season was just like an odd season that year. Tri-City was not a contender. And Brooklyn was okay. And then Tri-City surges in the final week of the season. Brooklyn hangs in there. And then, wouldn't you know it, in the playoffs, and decided in the last game of the regular season, Brooklyn versus Tri-City is the first round of the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So now, bang, I'm back up in Troy again. But now this time, I get a different look. And I end up at the River Street Pub. Back then it was called Artie's River Street Stage. And I walk in the door, and I just felt like at home, in a weird way. I was like, wow, you know, this town has something. It was like, I don't know, maybe like when you see a girl and all of a sudden there's some beautiful quality that you didn't notice before, and it's just like, wow, you know, she's kind of hot. And I kind of just became intrigued by Troy at that point. Mm-hmm. And then the series was delayed by rain. It was a best of three series that ended up taking 7 full days to complete.
Yeah.
And it got me a chance to just spend a lot of time in Troy.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end of that series, I actually didn't go home with the Brooklyn team. I just stayed. And I told my old, you know, the guy that took over for RC in Brooklyn, I was like, I think I'm just going to stay here, boss, you know? And he's like, you know, I'm sorry to hear that. We're going to miss you. You know, we'll match whatever they're going to do. I mean, it was the same money. I didn't leave, you know, for more money or anything like that.
It was fate. The rain.
It was, I just felt it in my heart that I owed it. Now, number one, I owed it to RC, but there was something about the city of Troy that intrigued me.
Mm-hmm.
And I rented an apartment. Like, I did it all real quick. I moved back. I moved up to Troy on Halloween of 2004.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was fun what we did in Tri-City. We kind of just turned the place into like a mini Brooklyn Cyclones show, brought the whole freak show in there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I realized, like, wow, people like Brooklyn stuff up here. You know, so again, like these initial ideas manifested themselves like much, much later in my career, the stuff I'm doing now.
Yeah. So fast forward 15 years.
Yeah.
Good math.
You now own Bradley's Tavern.
That's right.
That's part of your portfolio with Clark House Hospitality.
Yeah. And I'm really proud of that place.
Me too.
I'm really proud of that place because we didn't screw it up too much.
Yeah.
You know, it's been a bar since the pre-Prohibition era. It's probably the longest continuously operating bar in the city of Troy. There's photos of it as the College Inn with a Model T Ford type car out front. You know, that's how long it's been a bar.
Mm-hmm.
And when we took it over, you know, it just needed some love. It needed some infrastructure. But Shannon Nichols has been working there for 15 years.
Yeah.
And you know, she's doing great now. Her daughter's working there.
Mm-hmm.
And we never raised prices. And that was the key thing that I'm proud of, is that we're able to run a sustainable business selling mostly $3 beers and $5 cocktails. So there's an approachability to it, which then results in an incredibly diverse crowd.
Mm-hmm.
People from all backgrounds, all colors, all ages coming together, you know, and there's nothing like it in the city of Troy. I'm very, very proud of the work we do at the Bradley.
I like to say Clark House Hospitality has everything from dive bars to 5 stars.
Got
Peck's Arcade, Lucas. When I bring people to Troy, or when people come to Troy, I do my best to make sure they see everything Peck's Arcade has to offer.
No, I appreciate that. And that's kind of on the fancier side. The thing that we're missing is the family restaurant, which we had and it didn't work out. Donna's Italian Restaurant. We had to close. We opened and closed that place in 6 months. And it really, you know, it took the wind out of our sails a lot. We were really on a roll there.
Because how many places do you have total?
Well, it depends on how you look at it. There's like four businesses in the main two buildings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we have the Little Peck's, the coffee shop.
Yeah.
The tavern bar above that, which is our cocktail bar. Peck's Arcade, our full-service restaurant. Lucas Confectionery is our wine bar. And then up the block, we have the 22 Second Street Wine Company, which is a retail natural and organic wine shop. And then we have the Bradley up the block. So it's, you know, it's nice. My life is in walking distance. People say, oh, you know, why don't you come out there and do something in Schenectady? I don't want to have an issue with a dishwasher, and then I spend an hour of my day in a car.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the way I want to live my life anymore. I just want to walk around. You know, I walk
is that
around
the
with
Brooklyn
my dog.
In you?
I just don't like driving.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I walk around with my dog. He's with me all day long, and that's kind of just the way I want to live.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm living nice right now. I like it.
You still love Troy?
Yeah, it just keeps getting better.
It does.
It's amazing, and I think it keeps getting better. But we're not like waving the checkered flag or anything.
Mm-hmm.
We all have a lot more work to do. I was in the confectionery last night behind the bar, talking to a girl that is from Lansingburg, and she's like, I want to do something like this in Lansingburg. And her idea is a book bar. So like a bookstore that's a bar. I'm like, you got to do this because it's easier than you think it is. And if you're thinking that somebody else is thinking it, and then if somebody else does it, you'll regret it because you're the one that should have done this. So do it. You know what I mean? Like, someone's going to do the Lansing. I wish I could do it, but, like, I can't. Like, I'm good.
It's a long walk.
Too. It's a long walk.
It's a long walk.
It's a long, but.
Groucho's legs are short.
You know, I'm good with what I got. You know, I don't really have much more further ambitions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not. And I think people think that I had those thoughts. But for me, it was just like, well, a couple of opportunities presented themselves and they made sense. And we did some things that didn't make sense, and that doesn't feel good. You know, so now I feel good about things. So I'm happy with everything.
So I would say back to Donna's, which I loved. It's a good Italian
restaurant. Great restaurant.
That was your one, since I moved to Troy in 2016, that was your one public and notable failure.
Yeah.
What do you think went wrong?
Well, you know, I read those Malcolm Gladwell books.
Yeah.
And he talks about a plane crash. And he gets into the forensics of a plane crash and why the plane crashed. And it's not one thing. It's not two things. It's not five things. It's like 19 plus things have to go wrong in order for the plane to crash. And with that Italian restaurant, there were 19 things wrong with it. You know, I mean, we could talk for an hour about it. It's not even worth it. It was just, you know, some things. My father says, he says, son, we can't do business everywhere, but we think we can. And it's a problem. I mean, you got to guess right. But I'm sorry it didn't work out. I think about it every day. It haunts me because the restaurant was great and the menu was great.
Yeah, it was.
And it was beautiful. The place was beautiful. It was just tough to get people there. The bar was too small. I mean, there was literally 19 things.
There you go.
19 plus.
What do you got, Bob? You've been pretty quiet.
Well, Vic's been talking. I don't want to interrupt. We wanted to talk about a little culture, right? Because we have a lot of entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
A lot of beginning companies, and they don't think enough about the culture and some of the things you said. It fit into your lifestyle. That's how some of your decisions were made, right?
Yeah.
This just felt normal or felt natural. What should they be looking for? What should they be looking at when they're looking at a business and there's not a fit? Or if they're looking to partner with people, how do you decide who to partner with and who not to?
Wow. Everyone's so different. You know, it's tough. I mean, my style's very unorthodox. I'm a feeler. You know what I mean? I'm not a business plan type of guy. I don't think I've ever wrote a business plan. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Maybe fake business plans to get like bank financing and stuff.
Yeah. You've never relied on it.
Well, you're predicting a fake future.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I think people spend too much time on like stuff that doesn't really manifest itself the way you think it's gonna.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think a general direction sense is good if you have a strong sense of like, something like this might work out. I mean, like my career is like taking steps forward that, and then you take, you know, you get bumped over to the left a little bit, and it's where you ended up, where you should have ended up, and you could never predict it. I think you shouldn't try to predict too much, but you should try to visualize, hey, what should my day look like in an ideal business situation? How do I set this up in a way where I'd be excited about going to work every day? What type of job can I create for myself that I would like to do for 2, 3, 5, 10 years? You know what I mean? Yeah. It's more about how do you put the day together that you really want tomorrow and next week and next year.
And then work backwards.
Again. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a lot of passion, right? It keeps you going too.
I'm on all the time. I'm very rarely off. You know what I'm saying? like I'm a light switch. Like I'm on or I'm off. But I'm mostly on.
What could you tell someone to encourage them to be on? Because I think a lot of people who run businesses get easily discouraged. Entrepreneurs.
Well, that's the point. It's ultimately discouraging at all times.
Is that what drives you?
I'm all right with it. Yeah, I'm okay with it.
Comfortable with failure and frustration. Well,
there's certain people when the phone rings, I know we have a problem. And I could predict what that call is going to sound like. You know, and I'm ready for it. Right now. This phone could ring right now. And there'll be a number of people, and I know exactly what the issue is going to be. But I'm ready for it. See, I'm on right now.
What do you hope happens in Troy in the next 5 years?
I think just this pace of growth, if we can continue to grow at this pace, we'll be in great shape. I don't know, you know, the conversation last night, but I really want to see something happen in Lansingburg. I really do. And it only takes like two little catalysts, and then all of a sudden a neighborhood's cool. You know, I saw that growing up in Brooklyn. It's just like, oh, this thing opened up where? And then boom, it's like everybody's going to a new place. And people are excited by that. So I'd like to see that happen in Troy, New York. And you're seeing it with South Troy a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I went to the little Rice Bowl last night. That place is phenomenal.
Yeah.
Great sake selection.
It's just cool. It's just a cool place, you know. So that's kind of going to link the downtown to like the Fazio's.
Yeah.
And then you say to yourself, okay, we got stuff to walk to. And now we got stuff happening in North Troy, North Central, along the waterfront.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got a brewery restaurant going there across from the Ale House. And so then you say to yourself, wow, from the Ale House all the way down to the Fazio's, there's connectivity. There's cool things along the way. You know, for me, the Uber thing was huge, getting people around. I want to see more people walking around. There's not enough of that. I feel like when I go back to Brooklyn, like I will walk for hours. Just walk around. There's mm-hmm. different things, destinations and stuff.
Yeah.
Like I come back to Troy and I really kind of don't walk that far. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like I'll walk like to Little Rice Ball, Orion's Wake.
Yeah.
You know, and that's about it. But I'd like to see that radius expand and that walkability, you know, with those destinations. I want to see more retail. I know retail's tough, but as the walkability, you know, increases and you see more people walking, you have more retail opportunities. So I hope to see more of that.
Any last words for all the entrepreneurs and business owners out there?
I mean, I could talk about the subject for 30 hours straight. You know what I mean? I could go as long as anybody could talk about a subject, I can talk about entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
And it's really my favorite subject. You know, I mean, I love business so much. I love the fact that there's an infinite amount of things that you can do. You know, there really is no limit, like in America. And I mean, we talk about like things like immigration and you know, the thing I think maybe we fail to realize is that there's a reason why like people want to come to this country is because your ambition is rewarded. You know, I was in China. I ordered lunch. I had a phenomenal lunch. I'm like, my God, this is like amazing. And I did the math. It was $4. And like easily in the United States of America, that's like a $40 meal for lunch, easily. And if I'm willing to pay 10 times what somebody else is for a product, as a business person, you're going to be where that place is. It's the United States of America. I mean, think about that.
And land of opportunity.
It's just amazing.
Yeah.
But sometimes I think we don't even see the opportunity that we have just by the sheer nature of the luck that we've had to be right here right now. I mean, especially in the city of Troy, it's like invent your own job, be whoever you want and do whatever you want. And you won't even be questioned about it. Oh, hey, I'm going to open up this business doing this thing. Oh, hey, great. You know, they have the ribbon cutting and everybody's there to support what you're doing. It's so easy. I mean, to me, you know, I've worked for people most of my life. This working for myself stuff, you know, I'm so comforted by the fact that I'm never going to work for anybody ever again. That in and of itself is the most liberating, exhilarating feeling. You know, I will never have another job ever again. Because I can figure stuff out no matter what happens. you know, I ain't getting a job. And that's a very good feeling, you know? It really is. So, I mean, if that type of, I'm telling you right now, if you're wired that way like I am, and I'm just unemployable, you know, and it took me a while to learn that about myself, but I am definitely not someone that can hold down a job. I just can't. You know, I can do a lot of things really well, but ultimately, I can't listen to anybody. Mm-hmm. I'm never gonna, you know. And if you're wired that way, if you find yourself, I mean, if you just find yourself like not fitting in, and you just go create your own thing, you know. I mean, I guess most people are wired to want to have like a job in a secure work environment. Not everybody likes living off the, you know, potential of something maybe working out.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm comfortable being uncomfortable. I really am. And I wouldn't have it any other way. You know?
Do you think that's essential to be an entrepreneur? You have to be comfortable being uncomfortable.
I think, yeah, I would say that that's essential. That's very essential.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm at the point Absolutely. Now where it's like in order for me to like feel like a heartbeat, I have to be in over my head at something at all times. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Otherwise I get bored.
Yeah.
And it could be just an element of the business that I'm kind of like taking on something new within this company. It's a very complicated company that we put together.
Yeah.
A lot of
So what's next for you guys?
What we're doing next, you know, we've got a lot of real estate here. The company owns 7 buildings. And percentage-wise, we've got cool stuff going on the first floor and most of them, but our upper floors are vacant. So I'm slowly populating residential apartments and second floor stuff in the buildings. And I'm getting excited about that for the first time. You know, Airbnb type stuff.
Love that.
Yeah. And so I'm kind of like enjoying putting these apartments together.
Yeah.
I'm working on a couple right now. And it's fun for me. You know, it's a different kind of fun.
That's what it's all about at the end of the day. It's got to be fun.
It has to be fun. You know, it's that may be the most like underrated part of everything that we've discussed is like you got to be having fun. There's no reason why you shouldn't. If you're not having fun, go do something else. Period. Whether it's a job or, you know, even in your personal life, like you got to have fun. Period. You should not be unhappy.
All right, Vic. Well, thank you for coming on the program. Upstate on the Move, coming to you live every week from Ignite U, New York. Thank you guys for listening. I'm Jack.
I'm Bob. We'll talk to you next week.